Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First on the docket today, Lori Vallow. That's right. The state is thinking about asking the court to do forced medications on her. Second, the Alex Murdoch case. Well, Alex Murdoch better get sober for prison, that's for sure. Now, Gabby Petito. Looks like the police maybe should have intervened. A New Hampshire man, only thing we can say is WTF. Falsely convicting people can be expensive for taxpayers. And then our dumb criminal contestant of the day with a little bit of a twist. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so, please hit that subscribe button as well as that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. I want to thank everyone for joining us last night for both our regular live show as well as our Patreon show. I think we had a great time. Join us next Tuesday, same time. All right, before we get to the docket, please consider going to crimetalkprep.com and get yourself 4 weeks of emergency food supplies at $50 off and free shipping. Now you say to yourself, why do I need to worry about anything like that? Well, guess what? Hurricanes, tropical storms, fires, flooding, anything like that can happen. You never know. You could be without power for weeks or even months. The reality of it is you need to be able to take care of yourself, have that emergency food supply, because when emergency strikes, you're not going to be able to run down to the local grocery store and get what you need. You need to be prepared. Do it. Go to crimetalkprep.com. 4 weeks of emergency food supply, $50 off and free shipping. You'll be happy you did. Let's get straight to the docket. And on the docket, first thing, Lori Vallow. Why is this significant? Okay, we all know Lori Vallow's been sent down to the state hospital so that she can be restored to competency. There was also a hearing that was held today. The court said and made the appropriate findings under the rules that it would prejudice one or both sides in this particular case, and therefore the matter was going to be set in private, but only as reasonably necessary to protect both parties' right to a fair trial. But what we can glean from the motions hearing is a motion filed by the prosecution to, well, get this. It's a motion filed by the prosecution to meet with the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. The motion goes on and says the state of Idaho hereby moves this court for a two-part order. One, medical providers, including but not limited to medical doctors, psychiatrists, nurses, and other staff caretakers tasked with medical, mental health restorative care of the defendant in the above captioned case, be allowed to speak with and be interviewed by the state. The state is performing its due diligence and must decide whether it should seek an order for forced medication as requested by the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. The Idaho Department of Health and Welfare staff are witnesses on this issue. They inform the state that they are willing to meet with the state, but want a court order to address any implications derived from potential HIPAA requirements. And also the state asked to be authorized to provide a copy of the Dr. Lander's initial 18-211 report and any of the raw data relating to the report in the state's possession to the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. The department has providers need any and all information that may help in the assessment of the potential restorative treatment and medical care of the defendant. So what does that tell us? Okay, well, the motion filed by the prosecution states first, we want to talk to the witnesses to see if, well, if this medication is going to help. Because guess what? The Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, the people in responsible for restoring Lori Vallow to a competent individual, wants to use forced medications. Now, I'm not a medical doctor, and I'm certainly not a psychologist, but I have had cases similar to this. And what that means is that they believe that this person is truly not competent, probably suffers from a mental disease or defect, is, and the only way to restore them to competency is for them to be injected with drugs or forcefully medicated. So what does that really mean? Well, it means the defendant is not willing to take the drugs voluntarily. So now the issue becomes, should the state be allowed to medicate this person, for lack of a better term, against their will? So the state needs to know if it's going to make any difference, if it's going to make her any better. Now, I've only had one case specifically where I can think of where this situation was done. Person was not competent, delusional, what have you. And the only drug that they could prescribe, and I'm sure I'm probably mispronouncing this, somebody will let me know if I did, but it was called Halidol. And it apparently knocked him out. And it made him very submissive and passive. And they said that the person was then, in fact, competent. And then as soon as they got off the drugs, well, they were not competent yet again. So it's kind of a big deal when the government wants to involuntarily inject you with drugs and they need permission. The state wants to talk to people at the prosecutor's office, but guess what? They're worried about HIPAA violations, so they need a court order to protect themselves. So the state is crossing their T's, dotting their I's to make sure they do everything correct. And oh, by the way, let the world know that Lori Vallow is, well, not competent, and not competent in a big, big way. We'll continue to watch that case, that's for sure. All right, let's get on with the rest of the docket. Now, last night during the live show, news broke of an arrest in South Carolina in connection with Alex Murdoch's shooting on September 4th. Now, Murdoch was reportedly airlifted to the hospital, and he apparently told 911 dispatchers that he had suffered only a superficial head wound when someone in a truck passed him by, turned around, and pulled the trigger. The bizarre shooting occurred about 2.5 months after Murdoch's wife, Margaret Maggie, 52, and his son, Paul, 22, were found murdered in mid-June. Well, Murdoch admitted to the South Carolina Department of Law Enforcement that he had hired a guy by the name of Curtis Edward Smith to kill him, according to documents released by SLED late Tuesday evening. The arrest affidavit states that on September 4th, the co-defendant, Richard Alexander Murdoch, conspired with Curtis Edward Smith in the area of Old Salcahatchie Road for the purpose of Mr. Smith assisting with Mr. Murdoch to commit suicide. Now, Mr. Murdoch provided Mr. Smith with a firearm and directed Mr. Smith to shoot him in the head for the purpose of causing Mr. Murdoch's death and allowing for the payment of a stated death benefit to a beneficiary of the insured Mr. Murdoch. Smith followed Mr. Murdoch to Old Salcahatchie Road and shot Murdoch in the middle of the road. Smith then drove to an unknown location and disposed of the firearm. Murdoch survived the gunshot and was transported to the hospital. Now, Murdoch confessed to this elaborate scheme on September 13th. He told SLED that he wanted his son to collect a $10 million life insurance policy. Smith admitted on September 14th that he was present during the shooting of Mr. Murdoch and to dispose of the firearm afterwards. Now, Smith is currently charged with assisted suicide, assault, and battery of a highly aggravated nature, pointing and presenting a firearm, insurance fraud, and conspiracy to commit insurance fraud in connection with the Murdoch shooting. However, SLED, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, said in a press release that it is expecting additional charges to be filed at a later time. Now, Murdoch plotted with Smith because he thought his $10 million insurance policy contained a suicide clause which would have limited or prevented payments if he died of his own hand. In a statement from Murdoch's attorney, Jim Griffin, and he stated that for years people have been feeding his addiction to opioids, then having been taken advantage of Alex Murdoch and his ability to pay substantial amounts of money for illegal drugs. And now someone has taken advantage of his mental illness by agreeing to shoot Murdoch in the head and take his life. Murdoch's attorneys also said that Alex Murdoch came clean to the authorities about all of this because he did not want law enforcement spending time on this fake crime when they should be focusing on solving the murder of his wife, Maggie, and Paul. Well, let's break this down, ladies and gentlemen. I saw Mr. Murdoch's attorney on NBC this morning giving an interview on the Today Show. He expects his client to be charged. Frankly, the fact that he is in rehab should really not be a reason why they should not go and arrest him right now. This was quite an elaborate scheme, and one would think that maybe this sort of elaborate scheme could have been used as it relates to the death of his wife, Maggie, and his son, Paul. Just thinking out loud here for a little bit. But I think that's where the police are headed. And I don't think it's going to be that difficult to figure out what's going on here. And this breaks down a lot of the 12 undeniable truths about life by a criminal defense attorney. Well, first, the threat of imminent incarceration tends to break the bonds of loyalty. It's always about the money. And when they say it's not about the money, well, you know it's always about the money. And there's two types of people in the world, those that are humble and those that are about to be. Three of those little life lessons all in one little case right here. I knew this case was going to get good. It's too bad people had to die for this to take place, but I think that Mr. Murdoch may want to get used to being behind bars, and I sure hope he was nice to a lot of people when his family was the prosecuting attorneys for the last 85 years, because when he gets to prison, he may find a few people that want to get back at him and would have no problem helping him commit suicide. All right, next on the docket. It looks like the police maybe should have intervened in the Gabby Petito matter. Gabby Petito and her boyfriend, Brian Landry, embarked on a cross-country road trip this summer, but Landry returned to Florida without Gabby, and her whereabouts are unknown at this time. Now, Gabby last spoke with her mother, Nicole Schmidt, via FaceTime on August 23rd and 24th, when she may have been in Wyoming. Her mother has also received a text message from Gabby's phone on or about August 30th, but said she wasn't certain her daughter actually wrote the message. Now, Schmidt said that Landry and his parents have made no effort to return her messages or help her while her daughter remains missing. Schmidt added that Landry's sister, Cassie, is the only person from his family who communicates with her. Schmidt finds the behavior baffling as he thought he had a warm and caring relationship with Landry and his parents. Schmidt also went on to say, I texted Brian's mom that I was trying to get in touch with Gabby. I also texted Brian. I got no replies. I knew something was wrong. I felt something was off and I needed to get her reported missing immediately. The report has been made to the police and they are considering Brian Landry a person of interest at this point, because so far he's refused to speak to law enforcement. Now remember, someone has no obligation to speak to law enforcement. It's better to look guilty than to be found guilty, but you're gonna have to take the heat for it. Shortly after Landry returned home from the road trip without Petito, he lawyered up and has not answered investigators' requests for information at all. At this time, it is still being treated as a missing person. Why? Because there's no body and no one said that there isn't a deceased body. And technically, there's no evidence that a crime has in fact been committed. Now, Brian Landry's attorney, Steve Bertolino, issued the statement on the disappearance of Gabriella Petito. He said in a summary, the statement says that they hope Miss Petito is reunited with her family and that the Landry family is remaining in the background at this juncture and will have no further comment. In response to the statement, Petito's family released another statement saying Brian is refusing to tell Gabby's family where he last saw her. Brian is also refusing to explain why he left Gabby alone and drove her van to Florida. How does Brian stay in the background when he is the one person that knows where Gabby is right now? And lastly, the Moab Police Departments have now said that its officers responded to an incident involving Gabby Petito and Brian Landry. Chief Brett Edge said the incident occurred on August 12th, and he said that the officers investigated the incident, but determined there was not sufficient evidence for criminal charges. No further details about the nature of the incident were provided, but Chief Edge did add that the couple were not the ones who called the police. Well, we here at Crime Talk, who like to get it correct, have received the reports from the Moab Police Department, specifically here an officer, Eric Pratt, and Officer Daniel Robbins were the responding officers. And it says that on August 12th of 2021, the Moab City Police Department officers were dispatched to a report of a domestic problem that had been taken place near the Moonflower Co-op. It appeared that the male and female had left the scene and traveling north on Main in a white Ford Transit van with a black ladder on the rear after the male and female had engaged in some sort of altercation. It wasn't clear, but I believed it was reported that the male had been observed to have assaulted the female. I heard other officers report they were off to look for the vehicle, and being that I had to pass the Moonflower in order to get to Main Street, I stopped there to see if any witnesses were still in the area. I found one identified as Chris, last name redacted out. I took down his phone number and left the scene because I heard Officer Robbins tell dispatch he located the suspect vehicle near the turn to Arches National Park. I heard him state that upon initiating a traffic stop, he observed the vehicle leave its lane and strike the curb before stopping near the entrance of the park. The report continues, I arrived on scene and observed as two park officers had also arrived. I assisted Officer Robbins in his investigation until I was called away to reports of an intoxicated male near the MRH posting a safety risk to himself or others. Before leaving, I spoke with the male driver of the van, the female passenger, and also called Chris to get more information from him. All three individuals gave me a similar and consistent story consisting of the basic idea that the driver of the van, a male, had some sort of argument with the female, Gabby, as I recall. The male tried to create distance by telling Gabby to go take a walk or calm down. She didn't want to be separated from the male and began slapping him. He grabbed her face and pushed her back as she pressed upon him and the van. He tried to lock her out and succeeded except for his driver's door. She opened that and forced her way over him and into the vehicle before it drove off. No one reported that the male struck the female. Both the male and the female reported they are in a loving and engaged to be married and desperately didn't wish to see anyone charged with a crime. There was no significant injuries reported, and both parties agree that Gabrielle suffers from serious anxiety, etc. It appears that the incident was more accurately categorized as a mental health emotional break than a domestic assault. I had to leave, but I understand that Officer Robbins got the mail lodged through the Seek Haven. Gabby retained possession of the van, and they agreed to separate for the night. No charges were filed, and no one wished the charges to be filed or for the separation to take place, although that was what, at minimum, Officer Robbins required in lieu of making a case against Gabby for domestic assault. Gabby is a 22-year-old female who's approximately 5'2 to 5'4 and weighs 110 to 120 pounds, while her fiancé is older, taller, and much heavier than her. He had no fear for his safety and did not exhibit any indications that he may have been a victim of a battered boyfriend syndrome. He was assessed to be low risk of danger as a result of the proximity of his fiancée, Gabby. Nothing further. There you go. Domestic dispute. I'm sorry. In every jurisdiction I've ever practiced in, that would be a domestic dispute. Now, which is a little ironic because apparently on their TikTok and Instagram page, these two look like everything is perfect, everything is lovey-dovey, and I think that's why they call it fake book, right? Because it's fake. It's not real. And, well, there you have it. So, is the boyfriend guilty of something? Or did Gabby drive away that night? To yet be determined. But it looks like maybe if someone had treated this as a domestic violence situation and maybe even arrested both parties, maybe Gabby Petito would still be with us. We'll see how things turn out. The plot thickens. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about, what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, a New Hampshire man does something that can only leave you thinking to yourself, WTF. A New Hampshire father, apparently on Monday morning, police were called to the home of this man, identified as 34-year-old Michael Higgins, on a report of an alleged domestic incident between Higgins and his partner. After conducting an investigation into the dispute, officers learned that Higgins and his partner were arguing, but it did not appear that the incident got physical. However, the woman revealed something disturbing to the authorities. Michael Higgins had allegedly put their 4-month-old daughter into the clothes dryer and turned it on. Police shared that the woman was able to quickly intervene and remove the child from the clothes dryer. The child did not appear to be injured. Higgins was then arrested for the charge of reckless conduct, endangering the welfare of a child, and criminal threats. An attorney for Higgins could not immediately be found, but the investigation is ongoing. That's right. Who would possibly think that would be a good idea? Unbelievable to me. This is why, when it comes to child abuse charges, I do not understand why they are somehow not treated as seriously as other violent crimes. That is a violent crime, in my humble opinion. I hope the investigation continues. Although we'll give Mr. Higgins the presumption of innocence, that sure sounds not good. Next on the docket, guess what? Falsely convicting people, that can turn out to be expensive for taxpayers. The city of Chicago has agreed to pay, get this, $20.5 million to two of roughly a dozen men whose murder convictions were overturned after they were allegedly framed by the same police detective. Now, the city council voted to settle lawsuits of Jose Montañez and Armando Serrano to circumvent a larger payment in the event of a trial. In 2009, a former prison inmate who accused the same detective of framing him received a $21 million win in court. Another jury in 2018 awarded $17 million to a man who claimed the detective framed him. Now, Chicago's legal department can't comment on pending litigation, so there's no information on what might happen to lawsuits pending that involve the detective, Rinaldo Guevara. The settlements for Serrano and Montañez would mean that the city will cooperate with cases that involve Guevara. Russell Ainsworth, an attorney representing Montañez, said he hoped that the city will take what happened in this case, a 4-year legal fight that culminated with a judge ruling against the city by determining that the case could go to trial, that it should settle the 11 pending lawsuits that involved Guevara. I hope they settle these before running up millions of dollars in legal fees. The city needs to resolve these cases. They will face trial after trial. Serrano and Montañez spent 23 years in prison before they were released in 2016. A key witness in their case admitted that he lied about hearing them confess because Guevara had threatened to beat him if he didn't. Like in similar cases, that ended in convictions being dropped. Guevara took the stand and invoked his Fifth Amendment right to remain silent when called to respond to the allegations. In one case, after he was granted immunity by prosecutors, he answered repeatedly that he didn't remember confessions that he elicited from two men ultimately convicted of murder, a contention the judge characterized as a bald-faced lie, before throwing out the confessions. just as prosecutors have been forced to dismiss charges against several men in recent years after Guevara refused in court to answer questions or claim he didn't remember facts about the case. Serrano's attorneys thinks the city might be inclined to settle cases because their key witnesses refuses to help them. Guevara has never been charged with a crime, and in a statement, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office said that it did in 2018 review allegations of perjury in one case, but there wasn't enough evidence to file criminal charges. The office also did state that they continue to investigate cases in which Guevara was involved. Ladies and gentlemen, you are the ones that get stuck with the bill when bad cops do bad things and good cops don't step in to stop bad cops from doing bad things. There's good cops out there. They have a tough, tough job, but they got to do it by the book. They have to protect everyone's constitutional rights, the rights that they took an oath to support and defend. All right, next on our docket, the dumb criminal contestant of the day. And this has a little bit of a twist. And this may be a little hard to believe, but on Monday, ahead of Hurricane Nicholas, which landed in Texas, there was a report that a man that was in Galveston Beach was walking down the beach dressed as Mike Myers. That's right. You know, Mike Myers from Halloween. You know, we'll take a look. Would that freak people out? Possibly. Well, who was this masked man? Well, his name is Mark Metzger, and he is a Galveston area lawyer who apparently has done a couple of these pranks that have got him in trouble in the past. In this particular situation, apparently people were walking up. Maybe a couple were a little freaked out. A couple of other people wanted to have photos taken with the Mike Myers walking down the beach. But somebody wasn't in the mood for a joke, apparently. Blame it on the hurricane. Called the police. The police show up. They find out that there isn't a masked man walking down the beach with blood on a knife. It's fake blood. And it's a mask. And it turns out the guy is an attorney. Well, the Mike Myers, a.k.a. Galveston attorney, was charged with disorderly conduct and released. I would say that this would be the dumb criminal contestant, but I really can't think of what is a crime about walking around in a costume with a fake mask. I get maybe it pulled resources away from an incoming storm to deal with this particular situation when there really wasn't a situation. So we're going to split the baby here today, ladies and gentlemen. Our Mike Myers, a.k.a. attorney in Galveston, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And the other half is going to have to go to the Galveston Police Department for actually writing him a ticket. All right. At least we know where to find Mike Myers if he is found to be our dumb criminal contestant of the day. All right. A lot of big news today. Long show. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.